Hey guys, hey girls, welcome to the program. Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Show. Glad you could make it. We have a long distance to go tonight, that's for sure. Oh, by the way, AT&T once again acting like the incompetent corporation that it is, has informed us that all of our phones will be ready Tuesday. So, once again tonight, we just have the one line, but we will certainly make it available here in a little while tonight. Write the number down, 877-99-MALLOY. That's how you get in touch with us. If you want further information about what's going on, go to the website, MikeMalloy.com. A lot of changes coming there soon, but for the time being, there is information about downloading podcasts, courtesy of Ben Birch, which are still free. Aren't they? Are they still free? Okay. For a little longer. And streaming. We get a lot of emails from people that say, what happened? The Phoenix station is dark. There's no Nova. And I'm not mocking you because I try to answer those emails. There is no Nova M. Nova M slipped into a black hole. It went bankrupt like so many things these days. As far as the 48-hour, 72-hour successor to Nova M, on Second Thought Radio. That, you know, Mike Newcomb, who put that together, had a good idea, but, you know, once he waded into it, he's a physician, not a radio man, and he's not a kamikaze pilot. So when he waded into it and saw what this was all about, he, too, decided that it might be best to stick to his day job, which is a physician, for God's sake.
Damn it, Kirk, I'm a doctor, not a radio network engineer. Now, don't mock anybody who writes to you with a tone of, what happened? That's how I've been talking for about 2 weeks now. Almost every voice that comes out of my mouth is non-human.
That's true. But you're dealing with corporate America and the craziness, the absolute craziness that has been involved. And nobody, you know, I don't blame it. Nobody wants to hear this garbage. I'm just saying. It's insane. Whatever happened to the idea of people being able to do their job? Oh, don't get me started. Never mind. Forget it. Let's start tonight with probably one of the worst stories that I saw today in my cruise around the web and news places and news sources and so on and so forth. This one is so bad. Why am I laughing? I'm not laughing because of the story. I'm laughing because this story comes from America. Well, not really. It comes from Texas. Okay. I don't mean to piss off the decent people in Texas, but don't forget, what's his name? Chuck Norris is going to get all of his beer-bellied, smelly patriot types with their AK-99s and 12 Mac 20s and, you know, declare Texas independent. That's what he's going to do. Yep. And Texas is going to become an independent country again. You know, I almost think that might be an interesting thing for Chuck Norris to do, because then immediately these Mexican drug gangs that are wiping out half the civilian population of Mexico would say, okay, here's a new country we can invade and take over. It's not the United States. If it were the United States, they send the Marines down to kill us all. But it's run by some kung fu jerk. Let's go! So go ahead, Chuck. But let the decent people in Texas get the hell out of town. And, you know, before you pull off your... this guy is like... who's the rock and roller that's on the board of... Ted Nugent's another one. Man, what is up with these brain-dead speed freak jerks? Jesus, God. But anyway, this story is from Corpus Christi, Texas. There is a state-run home there for mentally disabled people. And seven employees at this state-run home for mentally disabled people have been suspended for staging weekly Fight Club events. You know Fight Club. Those are the no-holds barred. That's the newest thing that apparently American males are really getting off on. You know, we have satellite TV, and every once in a while we see these commercials for these huge events. where they put people, you know, when it first started out, what was it called? Cage fighting. But all of a sudden, it's turned into a cultural phenomenon that is drawing huge audiences where people just, I mean, there's no rules, apparently. You just get inside this place and start smashing your opponent. There's no rules. And when you watch the faces on the people who are watching this, and by that, I don't mean to indicate that I would watch this garbage, but when you see these promotions for the Fight Club, you know, 60-second promotions, if you look beyond the fighters and look at the faces in the crowd, which is not, I don't think, what the promoters want you to see. They want you to see the fighters. But if you look at the faces, you see the same expressions on the faces of these Fight Club fans that you see on the faces of the fans in the news reports who go to dogfights. It's the same thing. And the fact that there are two human beings in the ring, alleged human beings, means nothing to these people. So, seven employees at the state-run home for the mentally disabled in Corpus Christi, Texas, have been suspended for staging Fight Club events among the residents, the mentally disabled residents. The police, Corpus Christi Police Department Captain Tim Wilson says the Fight Clubs were uncovered when someone gave an off-duty police officer a cell phone containing videos of the fights at the Corpus Christi State School, it's called. Captain Wilson says the videos show mentally disabled adult clients punching, shoving, striking each other while the employees watch and cheer and egg them on. Captain Wilson calls the abuse he saw appalling. His word, appalling. He says police expect to file charges against these seven subhumans by the end of the week. The school opened in 1970 and is home to about 360 people. According to the website of the State Department of Aging and Disability Services. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? I mean, what kind of people do this? I mean, again, it's another one of those stories that just make me temporarily ashamed to be human. You know, to be a member of this particular species. How do we produce people like that? And why aren't they eliminated from the gene pool? You know, that is, I don't know. I don't know. That's the kind of entertainment that Matt Drudge would like and Sean Hannity. They could hold hands and watch this. And but normal people, my God. A letter from SF. Subject line, my town. Mike, I live way upstate New York in a rural area, and things are getting scary. My neighbor is teaching his three homeschooled, home-churched, yes, they have a church in their home, young daughters to shoot his guns. His high-powered rifle rattled all the windows in our home. Down the road, our other neighbor has been laid off, but apparently still has the money for ammo, as he's shooting his semi-automatic off at all hours for lengths of time. I took my truck to get it inspected yesterday at our local mechanic. I know he's a righty, but I feel for him because his 22-year-old daughter has been in Afghanistan for 2 years now. We can usually have a fairly civil argument about politics, but not this day. He had Rush on the radio. He called Obama an Arab and was telling me about his ever-growing arsenal of semi-automatic guns, including two from Russia. Usually good-humored, he was angry and agitated. He had a pile of anti-government propaganda for waiting folks to read or take home with him. I know his business is hurting, but I guess I will get our vehicles taken care of elsewhere. His attitude and words scared the hell out of me. Who will be the next to snap, is what I'm wondering.
Well, my wife returns from taking my little girl to school. She got beads in perspiration as she tries to keep her cool. She says that message don't get no better. There's gonna come a day someone's gonna get killed out there. And I turn to her and say, Texas.
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Now, turn your speakers up. Drive your neighbors crazy, right? Beats the hell out of the sound of, shooting off your semi-automatic weapons. You know, just turn up the program here and open the windows. 21 past the hour from Prairie 2, who sends us his nightly missive. Subject line, tell them that infection will clear up on its own. Prairie 2 writes, Ben Stein is making the rounds blaming Barack Obama for the ongoing economic crisis because, according to Ben Stein, Obama isn't patting everybody on the head and telling them everything is okay. Stein also singles out people like the formerly richest man in the world, Warren Buffett, for pointing out that things are bad and getting worse. Stein's contention is that since on the day after Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said everything would be back to normal in a few months, the stock market shot up for one day. Presumably, all Obama would have to do is tell that lie every day and everything would be just fine. After all, that worked so well for Bush. The fundamentals of the economy are sound. Right up until all the credit froze and the market dropped 40%. Keep in mind, up until that idiot McCain repeated Bush's mantra on the economy, everybody thought he would be the next president. So you can't blame Obama for not treating the people like they are idiots. While there is a sliver of truth to the idea that people are not spending all their money and this is putting a drag on the economy, keep in mind the average savings rate is only 3%. This is a marked change from the past few years when it was a negative number. But prior to Reagan, the savings rate was 20%. People have no choice but to save money now, since with the cuts in consumer credit, they need to have cash to buy anything. When it comes to throttling back consumer spending, the cuts in consumer credit far outstrip the amount people are saving. Ben Stein is also ignoring the fact that we're hemorrhaging 1 million jobs a month. And the big corporations that he fronts for have no intention of ever bringing those jobs back. And they're outsourcing still more jobs just as fast as they can. With permanent job cuts as a plan, we are nowhere near the bottom, if there is a bottom. President Obama will have to fundamentally reshape the economy. Even Harry Reid is starting to use the word antitrust, at least in referring to predatory health insurance companies. Antitrust has to become the watchword for the Obama administration. People have to relearn the wisdom that these monster corporations are as desirable as flesh-eating bacteria, and the outcome is pretty much the same. A strong course of Teddy Roosevelt trust-busting and muckraking is good for what ails us. P.S. Republicans have never seen a problem they couldn't fix by creating more poor people. Pray too. Well, our friends in the Great White North are have a plan. You may know Bush, former president, dictator in waiting, George W. Bush, is breaking out of his cocoon now, and he's metamorphosed into this former president, and therefore he can command lots of money. So he's going to go to Calgary for a speaking engagement on March 17th. And the people in, well, around the globe, but we're going to focus on the Great White North here, Bush can't get away from calls for his prosecution. And the latest comes from a Canadian attorney with a group called Lawyers Against the War. As Stephen Webster writes at rawstory.com, the attorney said she will file a suit against Bush and bar his entry to Canada over alleged war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. As reported by Canada.com, quote, in a letter to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police War Crimes Section and copied to Prime Minister Stephen Harper, Liberal leader Michael Ignatieff and other federal ministers and opposition MPs. The Lawyers Against the War group claims that Bush is, quote, inadmissible to Canada because of overwhelming evidence that he has committed outside Canada torture and other offenses as detailed in Canada's War Crimes Act, end quote. The letter asked the Mounties to, quote, begin an investigation of George W. Bush for aiding, abetting, and counseling torture between November 13, 2001 and November 2008 at Guantanamo Bay Prison in Cuba, Abu Ghraib Prison in Iraq, Bagram Prison in Afghanistan, and other places. The letter also alleges that Bush is engaged in, quote, systematic or gross human rights violations, which is a war crime or a crime against humanity, under subsection 6.3 to 6.5, the Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act. So the Canadians are going to make, some Canadians are going to make an effort to bust this bastard. More on this when we come back.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. So anyway, regarding this trip to Calgary, in the Great White North, by George W. Bush, this group, Lawyers Against the War, a Canadian attorney with Lawyers Against the War, has said she will file a suit against Bush and bar his entry to Canada over his war crimes. And she sent a letter to just about everybody in positions of authority in Canada, including the war crimes section of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, who is a right-winger, the Liberal leader, Michael Ignatieff, and I guess most people in the United States understand the Royal Canadian Mounted Police is kind of like, you know, you folks listening in Canada, don't jump on my case now, but it's kind of like the FBI and a national police force, a little bit different from... which is not to say that the cities and provinces don't have their own, you know, police force, obviously. But the RCMP kind of overrides everything, right? I hope I'm right. So other federal ministers and opposition MPs, they've all gotten this letter from Lawyers Against the War that stresses the fact that Bush is inadmissible to Canada because of the evidence he's committed a torture and other offenses as detailed in Canada's War Crimes Act. Anyway, Canadian magazine C, which is kind of like Time, I guess, said, quote, the federal government is keeping silent on the upcoming visit. We have no comments to offer on the visit of George W. Bush to Calgary, said Foreign Affairs spokesperson Elaine Cachione in an email. Cachione? When told about this letter from the attorney, a spokesperson with the Canadian Border Services Agency said, quote, we wouldn't comment on something like that, end quote. And Lawyers Against the War's Gail Davidson noted that the British Columbia Court of Appeal has ruled that a private prosecution of this nature cannot proceed to a first hearing without the consent of the federal attorney general, who is Robert Nicholson. And the attorney for Lawyers Against the War said, we can assume that he won't give his consent, so the next step would be to take an application to the Federal Court of Canada seeking an order of mandamus compelling the Attorney General to give his consent so that a first hearing on barring Bush could be held. Well, they don't have a lot of time left. This murderous son of a bitch is due there March 17. What's the date today? What is this, the 9th? 12th? 5 days. So, now, you know, this is the part I can't understand. The reluctance about going after Bush. Maybe it's a tribal thing, a racial thing. I mean, these are the government officials in Canada are white. Bush is white. Can you imagine, just for a moment, what if the visit was from an attempted visit from this crazy man in the Sudan who now has an arrest warrant out for him because of his war crimes against the Sudanese people in Darfur? You know, what if it was some Eastern European, somebody on a wanted list? There's still some Serbian people who are on wanted lists. What if it was somebody from South Asia? So, I guess if you have a weird name, a weird last name, weird to Western ears, with all kinds of consonants and diphthongs and things, or if you have dark skin and if you qualify as a war criminal, okay, we'll bar you from the U.S. or from Canada or from Spain. If a Spain will arrest you, we'll issue an arrest warrant. You know, we'll bar you from Britain. We'll bar you from Ireland. But if it's George W. Bush, a white guy who arguably has committed just as much murder and mayhem as some of these people with all consonants in their last name or of dark skin, who would be so much easier to arrest, wouldn't they? Or to detain. Right? I'll tell you what, I don't know how Bush is going to travel with security, but if somebody could get to his luggage and stuff in about, oh, I don't know, just a kilo and a half of, some uncut cocaine or put a couple of bags of reefer in there or whatever, then maybe there wouldn't be any argument with the Canadian authorities. Right? Oh my God! Pot! Grab him! But, war crimes, mass murder. I'm not picking on the Canadians. I mean, I'm just curious about why Bush is so hard to be snatched legally. Roz, who lives in Canada, writes under the subject line "Bodyguards for Bush." She writes, during his presidency, Bush was used to having a ton of military and security guards watch over him. How on earth will he ever manage now? I believe he has still allowed some bodyguards, but nothing near the number he used to have. This should prove very interesting. And by the way, who on earth wants to hear him speak? God, don't these people have enough money? There must be some other reason they have this urge to travel and give talks, though the reason eludes me. I guess the reason, Roz, would be just to prove that the people who are talking about their war crimes and their crimes against humanity are irrelevant. And that they bestride the earth with their policies, if not their own stinky selves. Ordering the destruction of people in the mountains of Afghanistan, 10,000 miles away, or the wiping out of religious groups in Iraq, or forcing people in the Palestinian territories to accede to demands by an occupying army, or to be able to do that, to be sitting on your little ass on a bicycle, riding around the White House grounds and knowing that those orders are being carried out and people are dying, for a certain personality type, that is as good as uncut heroin. You know what I'm saying? I guess that's why. I would probably be so happy if it were to happen, if Bush were detained. They don't even have to arrest him. Just detain the son of a bitch and question him the way they would question anyone accused of war crimes, with the kind of evidence. When I say accused of war crimes, he's been accused of war crimes by people like me. You know, we don't have any power, any legal power. But he has confessed to war crimes. There's the prima facie evidence. He has said he authorized torture. But it would make me so happy that I might be inclined to start looking for a nice house in downtown Montreal. I think Montreal would be a great place to live, don't you? If it weren't for the snow, it's awfully cold there, isn't it?
Can we go now? I just want to go away.
Montreal, Quebec. I've heard. I haven't been to Montreal. I've been to where have I been? I've been to all sorts of places.
Windsor.
In Ontario, not just Windsor. I've taken canoe trips into I forget the range, but it was north of Thessalon, Ontario. There was a little French-Canadian town called Chapleau. This is a long time ago, and the road ended there, and we put canoes in and took off for 2 weeks. So, and I love Canada. Oh, my God. But I've read that Quebec, and especially Montreal, is it's like a French city, you know. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Kathy's starting to roll her eyes at me. Regarding what's his name? Chuck Norris and his squealing. I guess he was on the Glenn Beck program. His little squealing about, you know, setting up a breakaway country in Texas. You know, you listen to that and you think, oh, Jesus, you know, it's just comedy. But then you see who's saying it, Chuck Norris and Glenn Beck egging him on, you know, and you think, no, he's not kidding at all. It's not comedy. Bruce writes in the long predicted, under the subject line, let Texas go. Bruce writes, the long predicted perennial drought due to global warming has set in Texas. There will be no wheat crop this year. Fossil water that they were using for irrigation is running out. They can expect hurricanes to flatten wide swaths of the state on a regular basis. Their oil is running out, and their factories are going to Mexico, if not China. Chuck Norris can rule over the deserted Dust Bowl while he slowly goes mad, or more mad. Oh, God. I keep thinking scenes from Mad Max. Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, I'm sure we've not only thought beside the following, put so succinctly by the blue girl at theygaveusarepublic.com. Quote, has anyone else noticed that since there's a Democrat in the Oval Office, everything becomes his fault at 12:01 p.m. on January 20th? But everything that went wrong on George W. Bush's watch was Clinton's fault. Jamie. All right, we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
To all the beady little eyes, the flapping heads are full of lies.
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
We need to form a force for
it.
Blame Canada!
Blame Canada!
It seems that everything's gone wrong since Canada came along.
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
They're not even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches? Should we blame the fire? Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
Not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, after the break at the top of the hour, we're going to talk some more about the almost or apparent or maybe not revelation by Seymour Hersh the other night in, Minnesota, that Dick Cheney was the go-to guy with an executive assassination squad that operated within the framework of the CIA, but the CIA apparently had no knowledge of, at least that's what they're saying. Well, it's kind of like the old Mission Impossible, remember? If caught, the director will deny the existence of your entire operation. So, okay. But we're going to talk some more about that after the break. Jesus, let's wait. We'll do it when we come back. Michael Steele, the new head of the Republican Party, the head of the Republican National Committee. The head of the Republican Party is Rush Limbaugh. That's why they're called the Limbaugh Party now. But you know, for the sake of familiarity, I'll continue to call it Republican Party sometimes. Michael Steele has the job. His interview with GQ magazine is just an absolute hoot, isn't it? Have you read any of this? You can find a lot of it online. That interview is the beginning of the end for Michael Steele, as much as the Limbaugh Party loves to have figurehead black folk. There are a lot of black folk who certainly will take him up on that. I mean, why not? Some black people think that that they got one chance at fame and fortune, and if it's on top of the Republican Party, why not? You know, like I said, that's a wrong perception, of course, but given the fact that most blacks of a certain age are very familiar with the kind of murderous racism that this country's all about, that given a chance to stand on top of a bunch of psychopathic white people, okay, I'll do it. It's fun. I'll make some money. The rest of the world doesn't think I'm serious about this, but I'll do it. You think maybe that's what Michael Steele thinks? I don't know. Anyway, he had an interview at GQ magazine, and it's reported by Charles Blow, that's his name. He writes for the New York Times blog site, By the Numbers blog at New York Times, Charles Blow. He writes Steele says he's a party-loving brother living in a black neighborhood where people might riot at the slightest provocation. This is Steele saying this. He's an ex-seminarian who peppers his conversations with profanity. He's enamored of arthritic rappers and old-school pack rat singers who don't give an F, and he keeps praying that he won't have to kick anybody's ass. All righty, then. According to the interview, he has, quote, a lot, end quote, of gay friends, doesn't think homosexuality is a choice, and in fact describes it as being as immutable as race. Huh? It makes you wonder, where was he during the Prop 8 debate, right? He loves the Oscars because he likes, quote, looking for who's got what dress on and what they're doing with their hair, end quote. And his direct statement to Michelle Obama is that he, Michael, wasn't feeling your inauguration dress. Bad cut, not flattering, little puff things. Uh-oh, you should have gone with Valentino. He didn't date much in college, he says, but he had a lot of girlfriends with whom he liked to hang out, quote, sometimes more than men, you know, sit back and let your hair down type thing, end quote. Well, now that's interesting, isn't it? Huh? He thinks the Republican Party has trouble attracting non-whites because it has given the impression that, quote, we don't give a damn about them, or we just outright don't like them, end quote. Them? Okay, Michael. He thinks people are constantly judging him because of his race, and he's not sure if he's an affirmative action pick. Go on, bro. Keep. You're not sure? Listen to this white boy on the Mike Malloy show. Yo, Michael! Of course you were! Lord have mercy! According to the GQ interview, he sometimes votes Democratic, and he thinks abortion, we mentioned this last night, is an individual choice. What? Well, wait a minute. Are you saying you think women have the right to choose abortion? That's the question from GQ. Yes, he replied, quoting here, absolutely. Of course, he went out there today, I think, on some of the news shows and issued an apology for the abortion comment. You see, here's a black man who could use his podium, because obviously he doesn't believe in this Republican right-wing garbage or the Limbaugh garbage, but what's he doing? He'll make statements that come from his heart and his head, and then when the white folk jump on his ass, he does the Negro thing. You notice that? He immediately does, I'm sorry, Mr. Limbaugh! I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. White Republican! Didn't mean nothing! I sure enough didn't! Didn't mean nothing! You want me to dance for you? Right? Taken as a whole, the interview that he paints is a portrait of a great dinner party guest, but an odd choice to lead the Republican National Committee. Charles Blow says he comes off as a somewhat confused, slightly angry, race-weary, hip-hop-loving black fashionista who's trying painfully hard to buck convention. He's like a Kanye West of the right. And then Charles Blow writes, you may not be long for your job, Mr. Steele, but you are making it fun while it lasts. Partay. Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to issue a public a retraction right now. I made a mistake in thinking that Michael Steele was not aware of what he's doing. He's aware. He knows what he's doing. He's the kind of guy, like Charles Blow says, he's the kind of guy you'd like to have over for dinner or have a couple of drinks with. Say, you know, say, Michael, what's happening? Talk to me. Tell me what is going on. Tell me what your take is on everything, because you seem to be a fascinating person. Wouldn't you like to sit down, Michael Steele, and do that? So I apologize, not that he listens to this program, but Michael Steele, maybe somebody will send you an email and say, you know, that white man, Mike Malloy, apologized to you last night. I really do. I apologize, Michael. We'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. We will go ahead and make the one phone line that we have available. We'll make it available now. The number is 877-99-MALLOY. That'll drive you crazy trying to figure out all the letters. 877-99-MALLOY. So if you want to offer up a comment on what we've talked about so far, since we are limited on phone service until Tuesday, kind of stick with the topic, if you don't mind, okay? 877-99-MALLOY. Oh, okay, nobody wants to call in. All right. The Dark Lord thing. This is unbelievable. This is the reason that Pelosi and Reid are really to be damned for what they said about impeachment is off the table once the Democrats got control of the House. It came out at the University of Minnesota 2 nights ago. It was an event that they have there called Great Conversations. And Seymour Hersh was there along with Walter Mondale. And the event was moderated by University of Minnesota political scientist Larry Jacobs. And the conversation, excuse me, was about the patterns by which presidents seem to get intoxicated by executive power. That's what they were talking about. The overall subject was titled America's Constitutional Crisis. And it according to Eric Black, who is writing at minpost.com, it was supposed to be a mostly historical view of events that have tested the U.S. Constitution, as seen by a journalist, Seymour Hersh, and a high government official, Walter Mondale, who had experience with some of these crises. And as they got into the conversation, Hersh and Mondale talked about the patterns by which presidents seem to get intoxicated by executive power. And at the end of one answer by Hersh about how these things tend to happen, what happens to people who get into that position, like I said earlier, you know, somebody who would sit on their ass on an exercise bike and order the bombing of villages 15,000 miles away just by, you know, picking his nose. It is astonishing. I frankly don't believe anyone should have that kind of power, but what are you going to do? You know, we are where we are, in terms of technology and destruction and, the ability to, treat people as if they were rocks or carrots or, you know, some kind of a desert plant. So some of us, like George W. Bush. Anyway, at the end of the answer about how these things tend to happen, all this power, tripping, Larry Jacobs asked, quote, and do they continue to happen to this day? The, he was referring to, that even though there's only a few references to the founding fathers, the history was mostly recent about how this power trip happened, starting with the Vietnam War. But much of it arose from the second Bush administration, which both of these guests, Hirsch and Mondale, really denounced. But then the question came from Jacobs, and do they continue to happen to this day? And this is when Hirsch replied, yeah, after 9/11, I haven't written about this yet, but the Central Intelligence Agency was very deeply involved in domestic activities against people they thought to be enemies of the state without any legal authority for it. And they haven't been called on it yet. That does happen, you know. And then he went on. Right now, today, there was a story in the New York Times that, if you read it carefully, mentions something known as the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, it's called. It's a special wing of our special operations community that is set up independently. They don't report to anybody, except in the Bush-Cheney days, they reported directly to the Cheney office. They did not report to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or to the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates. They reported directly to Cheney. Now, because of that, Hirsch went on, Congress has no oversight of it. It's an executive assassination ring, essentially. And it's been going on and on and on. Just today in the Times, there was a story that its leaders, a three-star admiral named William H. McGraven, ordered a stop to it because there were so many collateral deaths. And under President Bush's authority, they've been going into countries, not talking to the ambassador or the CIA station chief, and finding people on a list and executing them and leaving. That's been going on in the name of all of us. Hirsch went on. It's complicated because the guys doing it are not murderers, and yet they are committing what we would normally call murder. It's a very complicated issue because these are young men that went into the special forces, the Delta forces you've heard about, Navy SEAL teams, highly specialized. In many cases, they were the best and the brightest, really, no exaggerations, really fine guys that went in to do the kind of necessary jobs that they think you need to do to protect America. And then they find themselves torturing people. I've had people say to me, Hirsch went on, 5 years ago I had one say, what do you call it when you interrogate somebody and you leave them bleeding and they don't get any medical committee attention? 2 days later they die. Is that murder? What happens if I get before a committee? But, Hirsch added, they're not going to get before a committee. End quote. Now, most of you know that Hirsch is the best known investigative reporter of his generation. He writes about these kinds of issues for The New Yorker. He's written before about JSOC, including last July, he wrote, quote, under the Bush administration's interpretation of the law, clandestine military activities like covert CIA operations do not need to be depicted in a finding, a presidential finding. That's a special document that a president has to issue, though not make public, to authorize these actions. Unlike covert CIA operations, they do not need, Hirsch wrote, to be depicted in a finding because the president has a constitutional right to command combat forces in the field without congressional interference. Yeah, in a time of war. Back and forth with Larry Jacobs and Walter Mondale and Seymour Hirsch is online someplace. You can go to minpost.com. Look around, you'll find it. an executive assassination ring that is absolutely and completely prohibited by Nuremberg, Geneva Conventions. Well, not Geneva Conventions, but it's not mentioned, I don't think, because, well, maybe it is. But I know Nuremberg, let's assume Geneva Conventions about the conduct in war. Certainly, the Congress of the United States has passed laws against this. The hearings, the Church Committee hearings back in the 70s, when the CIA, the last time was investigated for its murderous activities in this country, as well as around the planet, laws were passed specifically prohibiting this. When you take a look at the assassinations that were done during the 60s in this country, the assassination of Kennedy, both Kennedys, you could say, certainly Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Medgar Evers, the attempt on George Lincoln Rockwell, who was the head of the American Nazi Party, but, you know, it was still a hit on him. Who else? Malcolm X. When you look at these assassinations, and then if you step outside this country, look at the political assassinations, most of which you and I will never know about unless we decide to devote the rest of our lives to doing the research into this kind of history. But we mentioned the other night the president of South Vietnam, at a time when we wanted him removed, and Ngo Dinh Diem was assassinated, I think, in August of 63, and 3 months later Kennedy was assassinated. But these hit squads, that's what what's his name, Richard Armitage did, a big time dude in the Bush crime family. He was one of those assassins. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen. Try to deny the indivisible because they think we're fools. So foolable. I try not to laugh. The man is laughable. Boom time for Wall Street people. They want you to believe the unbelievable. They say we should accept the unacceptable. The pious and the hip. So hypocritical.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, well, I guess we've lost our entire audience. Nobody, what do you get, one call there, Kathy? Oh, my God. Okay, well, number's 877-99-MALLOY. I guess the right-wingers are right. Nobody listens to this program. Let's go home. Wait a minute, we are home. 22 past the hour on the Malloy program. I am kind of curious what your take is on this Hirsch story. Jesus God. Under the Bush administration's interpretation of the law, clandestine military activities, unlike covert CIA operations, do not need to be depicted in a finding because the president has a constitutional right to command combat forces in the field without congressional interference. Wow. So, according to the information, now, granted, Seymour Hersh has provided no proof, but Seymour Hersh is one of those people who is deeply respected by not just the military, but also the intelligence community. Because of his honesty. And last night, or two nights ago, during this event at the University of Minnesota, Professor Jacobs walked these two guys, Hersh and Mondale, through their experiences of the My Lai massacre, which Hersh first revealed publicly, and which he last night called, quote, the end of innocence about us and war, end quote. Yeah. The Pentagon Papers case, which Walter Mondale called the best example of, quote, the government's potential for vast public deception, end quote. They talked about Henry Kissinger's secret dealings, mostly related to the Vietnam War. Hirsch, who has written volumes about Kissinger, said that he will always believe that whereas ordinary people count sheep to fall asleep, Kissinger has to count burned and maimed Cambodian babies. Jesus Christ. They also talked about the Church Committee investigation of CIA and FBI abuses here at home, in which Mondale played a major role. He talked about the fact that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover not only spied on Martin Luther King, but literally tried to drive him to suicide. They talked about the Iran-Contra scandal. Hirsch said the Reagan administration came to office with the clear goal of finding a way to finance covert actions like the funding of the Nicaraguan Contras without appropriations so that Congress wouldn't know what was going on. Mondale noted that Reagan had signed a law barring further aid to the Contras and participated, Reagan did, in a scheme to keep the aid flowing. See, that would have been impeachable. Hirsch said that two key veterans in Iran-Contra, Dick Cheney and national security official Elliot Abrams, were reunited in the Bush, George W. Bush White House and decided that the key lesson from Iran-Contra was that too many people in the administration knew about it. And the Bush-Cheney years, Hirsch said, quote, the contempt for Congress in the Bush-Cheney White House was extraordinary. Mondale said of his successor, Dick Cheney, and his inner circle, quote, they ran a government within the government. Hirsch added, 8 or 9 neoconservatives took over the country, this country. Mondale said that the precedents of abuse of vice presidential power by Cheney would remain, quote, like a loaded pistol that you leave on the dining room table, end quote. And then Professor Jay, and I'm getting this all from Eric Black's blog at minpost.com. Professor Jacobs then pressed both men on the question of whether the frequent abuses of power show that the Constitution fails because these things keep happening, or whether it works because these things keep coming to light. Mondale stuck with a happy answer. Mondale said, quote, the system has come through again and again. He said presidents always think they will get away with it, but eventually reporters like Hirsch bring things to light, and then the public starts smelling this stuff. The courts and the Congress get involved. And Mondale said, presidents always, in the long run, find out that the system is stronger than they are, end quote. Hirsch seemed more troubled by the repetitions of the pattern. Hirsch said, the beautiful thing about our system is that eventually we get new leaders. Hirsch said, the evil twosome, Cheney and Bush, left. But he also said, it's really amazing to me that we managed to get such bad leadership so consistently. Hirsch added that both the press and the public let down their guard against government corruption like this in the aftermath of 9/11. Hirsch said, quote, the major newspapers joined the Bush team. Top editors passed a message to investigative reporters not to pick holes in what Bush was doing. Oh, my God. Dick Cheney, who put himself in the same ranks as and is, without a doubt, a political assassin. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Oh, someone finally got through in our mystery tour of phones. Jeanette is calling from St. Paul, listening on KTNF. Hey, Jeanette.
Hey, Mike. I can barely hear you on my phone here.
Is that better?
Yes. I'm on a landline, but you're very faint.
Oh, okay.
I'm thrilled to talk to you. I've been trying to get through to you ever since they put you back on in your live time slot here in Minnesota in November, and this is the first time I've gotten through. So.
Well, here you are. It'll be much easier to get through as soon as we're in this by ourselves now, so it'll be much easier to get through once we get the rest of the phone system put in.
Okay, great. I'm just glad I got through tonight. I guess the Cy Hirst thing doesn't surprise me a lot. Being from Minnesota, I've always had my strong suspicions about the whole Wellstone thing, unfortunately. And the other thing I wanted to tell you about, and it's not on the topic specifically that you're talking about with Hirst, but you're probably, are you familiar with someone named John Trudell?
I don't think so.
Okay, he's a Native American. He's an author, speaker. He was involved with AIM, and maybe still is.
Right.
He's fantastic, and I would highly recording. It's called Descendant, Now Ancestor. DNA is the acronym. And it's a speech that he gave. It's several years old, but it's very, very relevant.
Well, what's his name again?
John Trudell.
T-R-U-D-E-L?
T-R-U-D-E-L-L.
Okay.
And the recording is listed as being on Ascitis Productions Redline Records.
I have a
compact disc of that.
Yeah, I'll,
it's phenomenal.
I'll find it online.
And there's also a film, a biography about him called Trudell. If you can see that, it's definitely worth seeing.
Say it again. I'm sorry, Jeanette.
There's a documentary that was made about him called Trudell.
Trudell.
Worth seeing.
Okay. I'll check it out. Thanks a lot, Jeanette.
All right.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Email from Harris in South Detroit. Hang in there, guys. We are still here in South Detroit. However, there's only about half a dozen of us left. Everything else is boarded up and closed. The Bush crime family has ruined America and will be held to account. But we as Americans will survive. That's what we do. And we will be stronger as a society in the long run. So I say hang in there. Better days are ahead. Hell, I sound almost optimistic. Harris in South Detroit. Boy, that's a frightening line, isn't it? We're still here in South Detroit. However, there's only about a half dozen of us left. Everything else is boarded up and closed. When I was a kid growing up in Toledo, Ohio, all I wanted to do was someday to live in Detroit. It was Detroit was to that part of the Midwest what Atlanta was to the South, or New York was to the East, or Detroit was, well, Detroit. Reg writes, regarding the Cheney murder squad, if Hirsch knows, so do many others, including members of Congress. There is a secret government, as the Disclosure Project reveals, that makes the entire world grovel at our feet. Every quasi-official so-called investigation, from Pearl Harbor to JFK to MLK and 9/11, has been a farce, as is any commission pending by this so-called Democratic group of blackies in power now. I hope Hirsch lives long enough to publish his book. Ooh. Even if he does, no one will care beyond the usual suspects who listen to you and occasionally listen to me. Power has been abused for decades. The system only appears to survive. It does not. It is an illusion. You know, you wonder, I've been thinking a lot lately about the movie The Matrix, the first one. You know, for obvious reasons, right? Oh, my God. This is another one of those stories that really set me off today. In New York, Roman Catholic and Orthodox Jewish officials, those two fundamentalist branches of their religions, are trying to block a bill before the state legislature in New York that would temporarily lift the statute of limitations for lawsuits alleging the sexual abuse of children. I mean, right now, the law says that kids have 5 years after they turn 18. You know, people who have been abused, sexually abused, they have 5 years after they turn 18 to file charges. And Republicans in the state of New York, Republicans in their legislature, have time and time again, these Limbaughs have stifled any attempt to lift that time restriction for kids who were sexually abused by anybody, frankly. In so many instances, I mean, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to understand that kids can bury that. Now, I'm not talking about recovered memory scams. I'm not talking about that, so don't even confuse this. I'm talking about the real instances of children who are sexually abused by school teachers, by priests, by their step parents, by mama's boyfriend, or physically abused by the same group. In this case, Orthodox Jews. They're a bunch of Hasidic and Sephardic Jewish institutions in Brooklyn, which could, according to New York Times, could face equally costly abuse claims. So it's not just the Catholic priests who are responsible for probably more child sexual abuse as a group than any other organization in the history of the human race. I mean, it's horrifying. But anyway, in years past, Republicans who controlled the state Senate kept not allowing that bill to get out of committee if it even got that far. But the bill is now widely supported by the new Democratic majority in New York, and for the first time it's given a good chance of passing. That's in the state legislature. And if the bill is signed by Governor David Patterson, who has supported the bill for a long time, the bill would at minimum revive hundreds of claims filed in recent years against Catholic priests and dioceses in New York. But those claims were dismissed because they were made after the current time limit, which, like I said, is 5 years after the accuser turns 18. Similar legislation has already passed in Delaware and in California, where a 2003 law led to claims that have cost the church an estimated $800 million to $1 billion in damages and settlements. Now, the bill is known as the Child Victims Act, and the fact that this thing may pass comes at what the New York Times calls a delicate juncture for the Archdiocese of New York, which is the nation's flagship archdiocese. Cardinal Edward Egan is scheduled to hand over the reins in April. His successor is Archbishop Timothy Dolan of Milwaukee. And Dolan of Milwaukee was hard hit by settlements for past abuses by priests in that archdiocese, that he was forced to put the archdiocese headquarters up for sale. Now, you can understand Dennis Proust, Dennis Paust, a spokesman for the New York State Catholic Conference, said, quote, "We believe this bill is designed to bankrupt the Catholic Church," end quote. Yeah, the bill is designed to bankrupt the Catholic Church. Mr. Dennis, sir, may I suggest that maybe your goddamn priests are the ones who have been bankrupting the Catholic Church with their anal intercourse of little boys and little girls and the other sexual violence that they visited upon kids for the past, what, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 years in this country? How dare you say that the law intended to protect children is designed to bankrupt the Catholic Church? The Catholic Church is the richest institution by far on earth. It would take trillions of dollars in settlements to bankrupt your corrupt institution, Mr. Powell. So don't play victim. Countless hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of children are the victims, not your mentally deranged Catholic priests. Oh, God. This spokesman for the New York State Catholic Conference said that Cardinal Egan and Bishop Nicholas DiMarzio of Brooklyn went to the state capitol in New York this week to voice their opposition to this bill, and that a statewide network of Catholic parishioners had bombarded lawmakers via email. Catholic parishioners, obviously, parishioners who either, A, didn't have children, oh, wait, they're Catholic, or have chosen not to consider the possibility that their own children might have been violated. Not that every child that went to a Catholic church was violated, but enough were that this freak can say that the Catholic Church is about to be made bankrupt. We'll talk about this some more when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. So again, in the state of New York, there's something before the legislature that's been there many times before. It's called the Child Victims Act, and it's an attempt to remove the statute of limitations for kids who have been abused, either sexually or other physical ways, violence against a kid. And two organizations that are working strong in a very, they're lobbying like hell to get this thing killed, is the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and Orthodox Jewish officials in New York. And as reported at the Times, New York Times, while the Catholic Church is leading the opposition, in recent months a loose coalition of disparate groups has also joined the effort. They include leaders of the Hasidic and Sephardic Jewish institutions in Brooklyn, which could face equally costly abuse claims. The New York Civil Liberties Union and the Criminal Defense Bar oppose lifting these statutes of limitations as unfair to the accused, who must defend themselves against claims of transgressions decades old. So the New York branch of the ACLU says, no, keep the statute of limitations on. The Hasidic and Sephardic Jewish institution in Brooklyn say, keep the statute of limitations on. The Catholic Church says, yeah, keep the statute of limitations on. The rationale by the New York Civil Liberties Union being that the accused must defend themselves against claims of transgressions that might be decades old. Well, I have an answer to that, and that would be if they pass this law, lifting the restrictions, the time restrictions, would it not also be possible, and I realize we're entering into the greatest depression, but would it not also be possible to have a committee of some sort of a child psychologist, especially, and I mean the ones probably connected to universities in New York. I'm not talking about faux psychologists who make a fortune going into court with people and presenting as evidence these so-called recovered memories, which turns out to be garbage. I'm not saying all so-called recovered memories are garbage. I'm not. But I think we know that a certain percentage of them, of these memories are. They're completely fabricated. So would it not be possible, maybe it's not, to have an advisory committee in front of which these people who want to make claims from years ago have to appear and state their case and be questioned as to the circumstances or what actually is being charged. I mean, I don't know what would be the proper route to go here. I just know that there are very few crimes that are more vicious than the physical slash sexual abuse of a child. I mean, really. And in so many instances, the perpetrating sons of bitches get away with it. They get away with it for a number of reasons. The victims are usually kids being abused in an adult world, and if they're being abused by a member of their religion, whether it's a rabbi or a priest or just members of a Hasidic organization or a Catholic Christian organization, that's devastating to a child. Devastating. And there's no way that the child is going to step out and say, hey, the priest anally had sex with me. Or, the leader in my discussion group about Jewish history took me in the back room and fondled my genitals. I mean, kids, it's almost impossible for a kid to do that, right? Children's advocates say kids who go through this experience guilt and shame and fear of the emotional toll that is going to happen on their family members if they tell. So they suppress it. They keep it inside themselves well into adulthood. This is a very intense issue to me. It really is. I was not sexually abused as a child, but it is an intense issue to me. I realize there has to be a balance here between the rights of the accused. I understand that, and I think the rights of the accused should be fully protected, because this is a very dangerous area. Accusations made of events that occurred 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago when the accuser was a child, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years old. It is a very delicate area of law and psychology and guilt and pain and fear. It's all kind of mushed together. I can think of nothing worse than to be falsely accused of child sexual abuse, of a person who would be accused of that. No matter how good your defense is, no matter how, what the outcome, I mean, not no matter how, but if the outcome is in a court of law that the person being accused is found innocent or found not guilty, the stigma is there. You were accused. This is like the Salem witch trials almost. There is very a few avenues of cleansing oneself available after a person has been accused and gone to trial, accused of child sexual abuse or molestation. I guess the reason it's on my mind, there's a big multiple arrests here in Georgia across the entire state, part of a nationwide roundup of the sexual predators who collect and view and exchange child pornography. And I'm merciless on these bastards. I really am. I mean, people who do this, adults who do this, lock them up. I mean, lock them up for 20 years. I realize it's in some degrees it's a mental illness, but I also understand that sort of thing is practically incurable. I just, this is where I completely lack mercy, and that's one of my failings, obviously. I should be merciful, right? Not where it concerns children. I can't be. I've seen too many images of children blown to pieces in war zones. Boy, we'll be back after this rather lengthy break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back to the Malloy program. It's about 7 past the hour. RB in Canada sent this. I read the other day about the there's a conference, United Nations Durban Review Conference in Durban, South Africa. It's billed as a world conference against racism, discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. Oh, it's due to begin in Geneva. It's called the Durban Review Conference. Oh, I see. The first one was in Durban, South Africa. This is a review of any progress being made. Starting 20th of April in Geneva. Interesting, that's Hitler's birthday. And according to reports, it's shaping up to be the one that exposes who exactly the world's most racist nations actually are. And the way you can tell is by their conspicuous absence at this conference. Who will not be there? Israel, the United States, Canada, Australia. As one Haaretz reader, the newspaper in Israel, points out, quote, what do the U.S., Canada, Australia, and Israel all have in common? All were created through ethnic cleansing and apartheid. No wonder they all stick together, end quote. And the blogger here goes on to say, it will come as no surprise to learn that other countries that have threatened to boycott the conference include the U.K., Denmark, the Netherlands, France, and with the irony noted, Germany. All nations that over the past few centuries have demonstrated their own propensity to establish racially oriented empires. And, of course, all those mentioned are now supporters of the apartheid state of Zionist Israel, it says here. That's a quote. You know my attitude about Israeli policy against the Palestinians, but that's the quote from the blog. I'm curious as to why the United States will not be there. I guess because we have so much to answer to, and we just don't want to be in a public forum where those answers or the questions might be asked, you think? If you want to try again, the number here is 877-99-MALLOY. Also in the New York Times, there's been a series of articles all around the blogosphere and also in the mainstream media about what happened to Charles Freeman Jr. Who is Charles Freeman Jr., right? Former ambassador to Saudi Arabia under the first President Bush. He recently withdrew his name from consideration of being... of having a top intelligence post under Dennis Blair. Dennis Blair is now the Director of National Intelligence, and he announced that he would install Charles Freeman Jr. in this post. Apparently the decision surprised some of the people in the White House that Blair did this because they were worried that a selection could be controversial and an unnecessary distraction. Well, what did Charles Freeman do? Well, in explaining what he did and what has happened to his nomination, it gives you a clear picture on how it's done. What do I mean by it? How there is absolute control of certain positions in the U.S. government where it concerns the appointee or the potential appointee's attitude toward Israel. And that attitude toward Israel has to be absolutely pure. There's certain language that cannot be used. There's certain acknowledgments that cannot be made. And if the improper language is used or the acknowledgments are made, that person will feel so much pressure that he has to withdraw. And that's what happened to Charles W. Freeman, Jr. Just how controversial the choice of this man became clear a couple of days ago when Freeman withdrew his name from consideration and charged that he had been the victim of a concerted campaign from what he called, quote, the Israel lobby, end quote. Freeman, you see, has long been a mild, by the standards of the world, a mild critic of Israel policy where it concerned the occupied territories and the Palestinians. However, he spoke with a bluntness, as they put it in the New York Times, that American officials rarely voice in public. In 2006, a couple of years ago, he warned that, quote, left to its own devices, the Israeli establishment will make decisions that harm Israelis, that will threaten all associated with them, and enrage those who are not, end quote. That's pretty much a very clear and factual statement, is it not? It may not go far enough for the Likudniks, or you don't have to be a Likudnik if you're just pro-Israel. The response to that, the quick response would be, well, you know, what about Hamas? What about Hezbollah? What about what we have to deal with in Israel? I'm just saying, let's not get into discussion. I'm just saying that piece of the response is probably missing. But he says the Israeli establishment will make decisions that harm Israelis, threaten all associated with them, and enrage those who are not. Now, yesterday, he didn't soften his tone when, in an interview, he said that, quote, Israel is driving itself toward a cliff, and it is irresponsible not to question Israeli policy and to decide what is best for the American people where it concerns Israeli policy, end quote. Now, that's a fair statement. We do that with every other alliance or agreement or understanding that we have with every other nation on earth. And that is to question the foreign and domestic policies of those countries. I don't care if it's South Korea, China, Venezuela, the UK. We question the policies, and then we base our relationship with that country on the kinds of answers that we come up with. If Venezuela, if Chavez decides to start nationalizing certain industries, then, of course, there's a big discussion in the U.S. government, the State Department, and the U.S. military. Oh, okay, well, what about this? What about that? Statements are issued. Positions might be changed. Meanwhile, Chavez just kind of looks up and says, well, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, I'm the head of my country. So why not have the same kind of discussion about Israeli policy, and the Israeli government can look up and say, hey, listen, this is our country. We're going to do what we think is right. If you don't like it, kiss our collective butts. I mean, isn't that how it's supposed to work, right? But that's not what happens. Israel has as much of a right as any nation to tell the United States, back off. We're going to handle our policies, domestic and foreign, the way that fits our needs. If you don't like them, or if you see those policies as being similar to South African apartheid, okay, go ahead and make your statement, but we're not going to change our policies. I mean, isn't that way? But it doesn't even go that far. It doesn't even go that far. There seems to be an unwritten rule in the United States that no politician, whether he or she is elected or appointed, no member of the Foreign Service, no member of anything connected to this government dare question the policies of Israel where it concerns the Palestinians or the occupied territories. And again, you know, my question has always been, why not? The Israelis have a right to respond to the questions by saying, go to hell. It's our country. It's not your country. Go to hell. I mean, right? But anyway, Charles Freeman said, Israel is driving itself toward a cliff, and it's irresponsible not to question Israeli policy and to decide what in their policy is best for the American people. Well, you can guess what happened to him, right? We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
better stand back. Here comes 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So this Durban 2 conference, whatever you want to call it, is going to be held in Geneva, Switzerland, in April. Is it going to be in April? I think so. The reason I'm going back to that, let me come back to that in just a second. Let's go back to Charles W. Freeman, who was going to be appointed. He was nominated to a top intelligence post by Dennis Blair, who's now the director of national intelligence, and he withdrew, charging he had been a victim of a campaign by what he called the Israeli lobby. And it's because he had made some statements about Israel that were based in fact, and about U.S. Relations with Israel, which were based in fact. Other countries in the world have politicians who question their country's relationship with Israel, and they do it quite openly. And some of it is valid, some of it is invalid. What is valid is considered by these governments and by the Israeli government, and may be worked on, may not be worked on. What is considered invalid is ignored. Again, the Israeli government has the right to tell the rest of the world to kiss its collective ass if the rest of the world doesn't like what the Israeli government is doing. I mean, that's the right of any country, right? One of the things Charles Freeman said was that Israel was driving itself to the edge of the cliff because of its policies. Now, the critics who led the effort to derail Freeman's nomination, this is in the New York Times, argued that such views, like saying it's irresponsible not to question Israeli policy, that sort of view reflected a bias that could not be tolerated in someone who, as chairman of the National Intelligence Council, would have overseen the production of what are supposed to be policy-neutral intelligence assessments destined for Barack Obama's desk. In other words, saying something like it's irresponsible not to question Israeli policy and to decide what is best for the American people regarding that policy, that is considered now to be an extreme view or a view that reflects a bias. And some of Freeman's defenders say his views on Israel are extreme only when seen through the lens of American political life. And they ask whether it was possible to question American support for Israel without being either muzzled or marginalized, or, in the case of your humble and obedient servant here, being referred to as a Jew hater or anti-Semitic. I've said this so many times. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. If you show concern for the Palestinian people, you are automatically an anti-Semite, or trying to destabilize Israel, or destroy the Jews, or whatever. You know, I mean, I've had that my entire radio career. And the funny part is, when I have worked for networks owned by people happen to be Jewish, there's never a single complaint. Like I said before, I've never been told, "Oh, don't go near that topic." But for some reason, to politicians, because of the power, real or perceived, of AIPAC and some of these Jewish lobbying groups in this country, Israeli lobbying groups, any sort of criticism, not even criticism, any sort of statement that may seem to imply the need for even-handed treatment in the Middle East is seen as being anti-Israel and therefore not acceptable. To whom? To whom? Now, regarding the Durban 2 planning session, on February 16th, 2009, in Global News Service of the Jewish People, JTA, it says the following. The United States will participate in planning a controversial international conference against racism. The State Department announced late February 14th that it would send a delegation to the February 16th, 19th consultations for the United Nations-sponsored World Conference Against Racism, quote, as a means of evaluating the current direction of conference preparations and whether U.S. participation in the conference itself is warranted, end quote. Now, you have to remember, a lot of people don't pay any attention to this, and you should. The U.S. and Israel walked out of the Durban Conference back in 2001 in South Africa after the introduction of a resolution comparing Zionism to racism. And that resolution is likely to be raised again at the second one. So rather than attend, now the U.S. has just completely dropped out, rather than attend you see. And if our delegation felt that Israel was being unfairly accused, then defend it. Defend it. And if the Israeli delegation, rather than not attending, if it feels it is being unjustly accused of where it concerns its relation with the Palestinian people, then defend it. But no. So the U.S., Canada, Israel, Australia, and possibly some more now have decided, no, we're not going to go there because something might be said, a resolution might be introduced that will upset the Israelis. What the hell? And back in this country, if you make a statement like, the Israeli establishment will make decisions that harm Israelis, threaten all associated with them, and enrage those who are not. To say that disqualifies you to be on an intelligence gathering bureaucracy in the United States. This is madness, goddammit. This is madness.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. So William Freeman, who was nominated by Dennis Blair, who is our Director of National Intelligence, Charles Freeman wasn't nominated. Dennis Blair announced that he would install Freeman as in a top intelligence post. And the Israeli lobby in this country geared up and went to work, including people like Charles Schumer, Chuck Schumer, Senator Schumer, and put so much pressure on Freeman and on the Obama administration that Freeman said to hell with it. The lobbying campaign against Freeman, according to the New York Times, included telephone calls to the White House from prominent lawmakers, including Charles Schumer. It appears to have been kicked off 3 weeks ago in a blog post by Stephen Rosen, top former official of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC. Because Barack Obama himself has been viewed with suspicion among many pro-Israel groups, the attacks on Mr. Freeman, according to the New York Times, had the potential to touch a nerve. Many of those groups applauded Mr. Obama's appointments of Hillary Rodham Clinton as Secretary of State and Dennis Ross as a special advisor for Iran and Persian Gulf issues, but remain suspicions of other members of his administration who will be dealing with Arab-Israeli matters. Jesus Christ, Rahm Emanuel, who happened to, didn't he serve in the IDF? Rahm Emanuel is Barack Obama's chief of staff. What are these people worried about? Times goes on and says, after complaints from some pro-Israel groups during his presidential campaign, Obama distanced himself from Zbigniew Brzezinski, the national security advisor under that famous anti-Semite, President Jimmy Carter, who has sometimes been critical of Israel. So 5 days after Rosen's blog appeared, Senator Schumer telephoned Rahm Emanuel, White House chief of staff, to ensure that the White House was aware of Mr. Freeman's past comments about Israel. According to Senator Schumer, his staff then sent the White House copies of the statements. Mr. Schumer said that Mr. Freeman showed, get this, an irrational hatred of Israel, and that his statements were over the top. That's what Schumer said. An irrational hatred of Israel in saying Israel is driving itself toward a cliff, and it's irresponsible not to question Israeli policy and to decide what's best for the American people. That is prima facie evidence of that the speaker has an irrational hatred of Israel and that his statements are over the top. So this is how it's done, you see. Yeah, this is how it's done. This is how somebody who has the absolute temerity to question Israeli foreign policy. And why do we question Israeli foreign policy? Well, because we have a vested, or why shouldn't we? We have a vested interest in what happens to the state of Israel, don't we? I guess we do. We provide much foreign aid that is usually turned right around and spent on our advanced weapon systems. We have defended and promoted Israel, not defended them militarily. We have defended them politically since their birth. So it is crazy not to question U.S.-Israel relations. But anyone who does is immediately attacked, and attacked in the most vicious way. Attacked with words like Mr. Freeman shows an irrational hatred of Israel. Now, how do you respond to that if you're Charles Freeman Jr.? How do you respond? No, I don't. Oh. No, I don't. I don't have an irrational hatred of Israel at all. I am concerned about Israeli foreign policy vis-a-vis U.S. foreign policy and vis-a-vis its own existence. Why is that an irrational hatred of Israel? Well, you know why it is. Because it dares question anything. It dares comment on anything regarding Israel and the United States. The Times goes on to say, in the days after Schumer's first phone call, other lawmakers and pro-Israel groups began applying pressure on the White House. Representative Steve Israel, there you go, a New York Democrat, also called Rahm Emanuel about the pick and pushed Mr. Blair's inspector general to examine possible conflicts of interest surrounding Mr. Freeman's relationships with the Chinese and the Saudi governments. It goes on. Robert Gibbs, the White House spokesman, declined to comment yesterday. As head of the Middle East Policy Council, Freeman was a frequent critic of policy toward Israel. In a speech in 2005, he said, quote, "As long as the United States continues unconditionally to provide the subsidies and political protection that makes the Israeli occupation and the high-handed and self-defeating policies it engenders possible, there is little, if any, reason to hope that anything resembling the former peace process can be resurrected," end quote. Wow, that's really a hate Israel policy, isn't it? Huh? You hear that statement? Freeman said he's out of here. He has better things to do with his life. He said he had yet to decide what was next for him. According to the New York Times, he said, quote, "I'm in a position to redefine my life and to press the reset button, and you don't get that very often," end quote. Goodbye. That's how it's done. That's how it's done. Some blogger someplace says, you know, this guy hates Israel, and boom, off they go. That really irritates me. That irritates me so bad, sometimes I can hardly stand it. Well, you know. All right, two emails from two women who happen to be Jewish. Here's the first one. Obama originally was going to allow the U.S. to attend the Congress, but AIPAC stepped in. The reason given was opposition to the wording of the official Durban document, which stated that the conference, quote, "expresses deep concern at the plight of Palestinian refugees and other inhabitants of the Arab-occupied territories, as well as displaced persons who are forced to leave their homes because of war and racial policies of the occupying power, and who are prevented from returning to their homes and properties because of a racially based law of return," end quote. And as this writer says, once again, Israeli lobbies set American foreign policy. And I know you're listening, and I know you don't care if I give your name, but just for the hell, I'm not going to. I will say that the person who wrote that is Jewish. Here's another one, and I believe she's Jewish also. "President Obama seems to be following the others where Israel is concerned." This is from Democracy Now. And you know Amy Goodman, Democracy Now is Jewish. "In Israel and the occupied territories, the Obama administration has announced it will withdraw its entire $900 million aid pledge that we talked about in this program, as a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, if the pending Palestinian unity government doesn't recognize Israel's, quote, right to exist, end quote. The warning of the withdrawal of this money was reportedly delivered by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas last week. Clinton told Abbas, the U.S. Congress won't approve Palestinian aid unless the Palestinian government also renounces violence. Of course, no such conditions have been imposed on Israel. The Israeli government refuses to renounce violence and has never recognized the right of the Palestinian of Palestine to exist. Palestinians have also criticized the demand that they recognize Israel's so-called right to exist because it forces them to go beyond recognizing Israel within secure borders, but in fact affirm the legitimacy of their dispossession and ongoing occupation. End quote from Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. Scott is calling from Seattle, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Scott, thanks for holding on.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right.
Good. Well, this is kind of off topic, so I'll try to be brief.
That's okay. I just wanted to get that out because this Freeman story has been rattling around in my stack of stories here for 3 days, and I haven't gotten to it. And then this thing came up about the United States is not going to attend so-called Durban 2 to talk about racism. And it just, I mean, it always pisses me off when stories like this have a nexus, an intersection. I think, oh, boy, here we go again. So if you want to change topics, go ahead. That's all right with me.
Okay. Well, I was listening to, one of the many economists on the radio today, and he seemed to think, as many of them think, that this is, just sort of the beginning of the decline. And I tend to agree with him mainly because of these 4 and 5 year ARM mortgages that were taken out back when the economy was in decent shape. You know, all those mortgage rates are changing now.
Uh-huh.
And I think that in and of itself is probably a good indication that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
But, what I really called about was I've noticed something about myself that I've allowed myself to be completely saturated by this 24-hour-a-day news. And it's affected my friends as well. And it's the same type of thing. Maybe you experienced it right after 9/11, when all the scrolls started,
right.
And it was just constant news. And I noticed it amongst myself and my friends also after Bush's reelection. And so I guess I just want to kind of remind your listeners that sometimes we have to take a step back and we just have to relax.
Well,
take care of ourselves.
I'm curious about what you mean, how the news is affecting you. So let me put you on hold and I'll come back. Because I want you to finish that thought, okay?
Okay.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll take the break and we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Ten before the hour, usual gang gets the blame for this tonight. Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, all in some way, shape, or form responsible for the previous 3 hours. All right, back to Scott in Seattle. All right, now you were talking about how the influence of television has affected you. How?
Well, it's actually all media, in my opinion. But, when it's just a constant barrage of bad news, if you allow it to seep in, then, everything from sleep disturbances to just depression and pessimism. I mean, our brains are not made to exist in a constant state of fight or flight.
Right.
And it stresses our bodies and our brains to the breaking point. our heads in the sand in any way.
Right.
But I think we have to be selective these days, because when I pull up New York Times or CNN, it's all bad. It's just all bad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have to pull back sometimes.
All right. What's an answer? I realize you're not advocating sticking your head in the sand, but if one is going to be aware of what's going on, maybe the awareness is not necessary. Maybe I don't know. What's your answer?
Awareness is absolutely necessary, but we don't have to absorb the news every hour or every half hour. We mm-hmm. don't have to constantly be monitoring things.
Mm-hmm. All right. So these 24-hour cables like CNN and MSNBC and Fox, although everything on Fox is garbage, but those are the perpetrators, is what you're saying, because you get the Times in the morning or the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which I understand is about to go away forever.
Yeah.
You get these newspapers in the morning, read the paper with your morning coffee, and then just don't dwell on it.
Yeah, I check in with the news sometime in the evening, and I'll hear like the serious news updates and that sort of thing. But I don't hang out at those news websites.
I completely and totally agree with what you're saying, and I can use myself as a classic example. I pretty much have to stay connected to this slop and this garbage in order to do the show. And then I think to myself, well, what is this program about? I've gotten emails from people that say, you know, you're so damn negative that I just can't listen to you anymore. And I tend to agree. I think it would be a challenge to me to listen to somebody who went on for 3 hours about mostly stuff that is in the grand scheme of things is negative. I don't deny that everything we talk about on this program, whether it is abuse of children by priests or the sinking economy or torture policies, is all negative in a sense. But on the other hand, my theory has always been if these things are talked about, and I realize there's a limit. I completely agree with you. There is a limit how much people can absorb. But if these things are talked about and aired out, then perhaps people can refuse to vote in a way that continues this stuff, or once they found out that they thought they were voting in a way not to continue it and realize they've been fooled, well, then make every effort, legitimate effort, to remove people from office, either waiting for the next ballot box or starting impeachment proceedings in order to stop it. I think the worst thing to do is, and I know you're not advocating this, but the worst thing to do is to pretend like nothing's happening. I hate to use the poor Germans as an example, but is that not what happened in Germany in the 30s? Let's look the other way, because things are getting better. All the horror that was dumped on Germany as a result of World War I meant that when somebody like Hitler came along, people were more than willing to say, I'm not going to look at what's going on to the Jews. I'm not going to look what's going on where it concerns the consolidation of power, yada, yada, yada. So I hear what you're saying, but I hope what you're saying, and I think you are, is that there's a balance point where people have got to be informed. But I agree. There have been so many times in the past 8 years where I've said to Kathy, just bluntly and straightforward, I wish I would have stayed in school, got the advanced degrees necessary to not be in this business, because it has been so stressful. So I know what you're talking about. But on the other hand, I feel like sometimes I feel like a canary in the coal mine, as though people need that. I mean, most people understand what's going on in this country. But again, I've said before that if this company has a mission statement, it's not to offer up solutions. Tom Hartman does that, and he does it quite well. Our function is to give people a chance to vent. To call in and say, oh yeah, Jesus God, isn't it awful? And I do believe there's some psychological value in doing that. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And see, your show is different though, because your show is therapeutic. It is about venting. It's not just 3 hours of information shoved down your throat. It's a perspective. And So I appreciate you. I'm really happy you're around, and I'm terribly sorry that that's not reflected in your paycheck. It should be.
No, wait. There is no paycheck.
No, we're
on our own. We're counting on a lot of things happening, but trust me, there is no paycheck. And there will not be for a considerable amount of time. Kathy and I are doing this on faith and what little money we managed to save because we think this will work. But, yeah, I wish there was a paycheck, Scott. Hey, listen, there's the music. Got to go. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate what you had to say, and I absolutely agree with you, okay?
Thank you, Mike. Take care. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, we'll do it. We'll do it.
We need you.
You take care, too.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, truth seekers. Paycheck? I remember that one. Do you remember that was? You remember, too, don't you, Kathy? You used to get one, too.
Been a while.
It has. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is no... No, it's not. Damn it, I keep saying that. This is nothing. It's us!